Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to BiteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.BiteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Okay, again, today my very special guest is Peter Aronson. Hello, Peter. Thank you for joining me today.
Hi, Robert. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, thank you. And I'm anxious to talk about your work in today's show because it seems like it's something that is really needed right at the moment. So,
thank you.
Let's start with a little bit about, if you wouldn't mind sharing with the listeners, a little bit about your journey and how you got to, you know, from lawyer to writer for, you know, the middle grade school kind of target market.
Sure, I'm happy to talk to you about that. It's something that's very near and dear to my heart. So actually, I was after college, I was a journalist for a long time before I was a lawyer. I was a journalist for about 20 years, but I had been to law school before I was a journalist. Then I decided to practice law once I had children, because traveling as a journalist was hard when I had children. So I became a lawyer in New York City where I live. And then I was growing tired of it, frankly. And I've always had writing in my blood since I was a journalist. I've always been dabbling on the side, various writing projects on the side. And then I noticed my kids, I have two teenage daughters, they were reading Harry Potter and Hunger Games and, you know, all these fantasy books. And I began thinking, you know, why aren't they reading books about real people, real issues? I know that there's some of them out there, but I just thought, you know, maybe I should start writing those kind of books. So I began writing them sort of part-time, and then I decided I was going to close my law practice, which I did end of 2018. And so, you know, I'm writing these children's books now full-time and loving it.
That's great. Well, you know, it is interesting that right now the fascination with fantasy and all kinds of areas that just really aren't very grounded, but I mean that we have really so much that to learn about. Do you think that the schools, the curriculum of schools right now, don't have enough of a focus on this type of historical, you know, civic-minded kind of story?
Well, you know, I see schools through the lens of my children, and I feel that social studies or history classes are wed to these curriculums that have been handed down from decade to decade to decade. I think my kids are kind of studying the same kinds of things that I studied when I was in school, and that goes back a bunch of decades. What I don't see is kids studying current events and tying that to history. That's what I see is lacking, frankly. And, you know, the recent book that I just came out with a month or so ago, the Jeanette Rankin book, America's First Congresswoman, you know, when I had not heard about her up until a year ago. I never heard the name. And once I heard the name and began reading about her, I said to myself, well, not only I'm glad I know about her, but everybody should know about her. Adults, high school kids, college kids, and certainly middle school kids. You know, we're obviously in the middle of this Me Too movement now, and women have made tremendous strides in gaining access to public office. It's long overdue. And, you know, here we have a woman who more than 100 years ago was the first woman elected to Congress. So I just think that I think teachers are teachers do an amazing job. And of course, mm-hmm. from school to school, it's different. But I do get a sense that they're wed to a curriculum that is very traditional. And I would love to see teachers tying more things into current events. That's my spiel.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, and I hadn't heard of Jeanette Rankin until I got your book in the mail. I was like, oh, who is this? You know? And,
right, exactly, yes.
So, but the her life work really parallels so much of, you know, today's struggle. Now, you mentioned the, you know, the hashtag MeToo movement. She was involved in the suffragette movement, correct?
Yes, she was. She was very much involved in the suffragette movement going back to 1910. And she's not one of, when they talk about the leaders of a suffrage movement in American history, her name is not brought up. You know, she's not a Susan B. Anthony or the people, or the other women who worked with her. She was, Jeanette Rankin was actually in school in the state of Washington in 1909, 1910, when that state of Washington, was beginning its efforts to get women the right to vote. And so she just read an advertisement in the local newspaper that they needed volunteers to put up posters. And she thought, oh, I'll get involved in this movement. And she began slowly, but once she began working in it and she began speaking, the leaders of the movement saw that she was very bright and a great speaker. And she quickly became, you know, very important in the Washington state movement, which in 1910 voted to allow women the right to vote. And then she, within a few years, because she was from Montana, she eventually led the movement in the state of Montana to bring women the right to vote in that state. And that's when she became famous throughout the state. So the suffrage movement is what really catapulted Jeanette Rankin to prominence.
Yeah. Now, you said that you she wasn't on your radar. You know, how did that happen? How did it happen that, you know, that this individual came to your attention and got to the point of you wanting to devote, you know, her story as part of your The Groundbreaker series?
Well, you know, I'm always, like everyone, I'm always reading newspapers and magazines, although maybe in my generation, younger generations are reading, you know, the phones. But I do actually read paper. So I think I was reading an article in the New York Review of Books, which is one of my favorite publications. And I think it might have been an article about Hillary Clinton, or maybe just about the Me Too movement. I don't recall exactly. But her name was mentioned once in the article as the first woman elected to Congress. I'd never heard the name. I circled it. And I said to my wife, Emily, I said, you know, I've never heard of this person. I should put this in my list of stories to write about for kids. So I ripped it out. I put it in a folder. And then I finished my first book. And then when it came time for me to pick my second topic for the next book, I went through the file and I thought, well, this is perfect timing. You know, we're in the middle of the Me Too movement. No one's heard about her except for people. Everyone in Montana knows about her. But most people elsewhere do not know about her. So I thought, I'm going to dig into this story. And I began reading. And you know, the more I read about her, the more I was interested. There have been, you know, a fair number of books written about her, but none that I could tell for middle grade readers, kind of the way that I was going to write it. So I read all the books that had been written about her. I read lots of articles about her, and I interviewed some people who were involved in organizations relating to her causes. And, you know, so it just sort of became an obvious choice for me, given the timing and so forth.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, and you know, it's funny how something as simple as reading a newspaper, you know, a column in a newspaper, you know, that would, you know, be the seed that would, you know, eventually lead to the book, you know. And, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, for would-be writers out there just to have their, you know, their antenna up for something that will cross their path that they find interesting and, you know, to write about it. I mean, that's, you know, like you said, when you read about it, you kind of added it to the list. So, I mean, it's kind of like you were already on the lookout for it and then boom, you did something as far as, you know, you're putting it on the list, you're having a list and then putting it on the list and then actually going through all the research for it. So
right,
now,
yeah,
Yeah, yeah. Now Jeanette was also the, as the subtitle says, the America's first congresswoman. So, can you tell us a little bit about her tenure as a congresswoman? You know, kind of what maybe her platform or interests were during that period.
Sure. And can I, before I get to that, I just want to mention one thing, if it's okay with you.
Sure.
What I found so interesting about her story was her progression. The journalists have a saying, you sort of can't make this stuff up. And, she was a woman from Montana. She was in a fairly well-to-do family, so she had resources. So she was able to go to college after she finished high school. She didn't have to work. What happened to her is that she, by chance, she went to visit her brother, who was actually going to Harvard Law School in Boston. And she saw she visited Boston and New York, and she saw the slums of those cities. So by visiting these areas that were much different from Montana, she was exposed to a certain way of life and certain issues that she had not known about, poverty and immigrants coming to America and having to really strive to succeed. Then a little later, a few years later, she went to San Francisco after the earthquake and saw the devastation there. And when she was there, she began volunteering to help people. And by helping people there, she realized she wanted to help people on a grander scale. So she decided to go to social work school. So she moved herself to New York City. So this is, again, you got to remember, this is turn of century, more than almost 120 years ago. And she's going from New York back to San Francisco, back to Montana, back to New York. she was traveling a lot. This is very unusual for anyone in that time period, and certainly very unusual for a young woman traveling, by herself back and forth. So she goes to social work school in New York, then moves out to the state of Washington, where she begins working as a social worker, helping people. And then she realizes that, she can help individuals in the state of Washington, but she can't help them on a grand scale. She can't fix the system. She sees all these poor women and these poor children who need so much, and she's frustrated. She can help, individual people, but not the large groups. So this is when it begins clicking in her mind that she might want to learn about government, might want to learn about how she can help people on a grander scale. So I just want to give that as a backdrop to, her entering politics really only 6 years later. She in 1910, she's in the state of Washington helping with the suffrage movement. And then 1914, she's in Montana helping with the Montana suffrage movement. And then she runs for office in 1916. And she's a 36-year-old woman, young by any standards, to run for a federal office. Right. And certainly think about it then, right? So I gave you a long answer to your question. I apologize.
No, that's great. And I'm glad that you did that because, in your book, you also, at the back of the book, you have the timeline. And I probably should have structured my questions according to the timeline. But that timeline is a very useful overview, of her work. So before we do the Congress end, which is where I was going, let's talk a little bit about the immigrants, that too, along with the #MeToo, is a very topical subject, in today's world. So, in her time, the immigrants were what, the Irish? What would that be about the time, or Italians?
Irish, Italians, yes, certainly from Europe, not from Central America or Latin America like today. These are Europeans. And what, I think she obviously was brought up with a sense that you got to help people in the world. That was her mantra. She never was someone who was going to go out there to make a lot of money. She was not business-minded. She wanted to help people. And clearly she was going to figure out how best to do this. And when she was working as a social worker, she was helping these immigrants. She was helping orphan kids and helping trying to find them a place to live. And I think she began to realize that, the issues were so grand. There were so many people who needed help that she needed to do more than just help the individuals. And that's why she enrolled back in school after, this was after going to college, graduating, after going to social work school. And now she's enrolling back in school again for a third time. So, even in today's world, that would be unusual to have 2 degrees and then go back to school again. But certainly then it was much more unusual. And she just wanted to learn about government. And also she studied public speaking because she began to feel that that would help her communicate whatever she was going to end up communicating to the world.
Yeah, that's, the one thing is when you look at the progression of her work, I mean, it does seem, one job or role does seem to build on another. I mean, like you say, it seems that the guiding principle was the most widespread effectiveness possible is what she was seeking.
Right. I agree. And just, think how smart she was. I mean, I really marvel at the progression as you talked about. And, she realized what she needed to do to really make change. And I think she really thought it through, and she was a real pioneer in thinking that way.
Yeah. And she must have faced, I would think, amazing opposition to her work, all along the way, everything from, as far as social work, that I would think would have been often females would have filled that role. But, taking that to the next level of even running for Congress and winning, that had to have rankled a few male feathers, I would think.
Well, there's no question it did, but we have to put her run for Congress in perspective in the state of Montana. She became certainly one of the very most famous people in the state by leading the movement for women to gain the right to vote in that state. And Montana was a progressive state, as were, the right to vote statewide, not nationally, but statewide, was really a Western movement. If you look at the list of states that granted, the right to vote early on, it's, Wyoming, Colorado, Utah, Idaho, Washington, California, et cetera. And then you get to Montana. So, she was very famous in Montana. And I think she was very well respected. In fact, she was the first woman ever asked to speak to the full house, the full legislature in the capital of Montana before she decided to run for office. So I think while there was certainly, male opposition and, mm-hmm. and a lot of opposition, she was successful because of her suffrage efforts and because she was so well known. And, also because women then had the right to vote when she ran. So, she wasn't running when just only men had the right to vote. She was running when all the women had the right to vote, too. And she put the, women joined on to her drive to run for Congress. So she had huge female support and also ample male support as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I understand that she was a pacifist and staunchly anti-war, and that position may have affected her longevity in Congress. Is that correct?
No question about it. When we talk about this, Robert, it's really interesting. In some ways, you could say two ways. One way is she stood up for what she believed in, and she never backed down. That's certainly true. another way to look mm-hmm. at this is she shot herself in the foot, and because of that, she was really not an overly effective congresswoman. Okay, so she has a, aside from being the first woman elected, her stay in Congress is unprecedented for another very important reason. So when she was elected in 1916, soon after, President Wilson went to Congress and asked Congress to declare war, to join World War One. It was spring of 1917. And so for Jeanette Rankin's first vote in Congress, so the first female vote ever in the U.S. Congress was Jeanette Rankin voting, yes, U.S. should enter World War One, or no, it should not enter. And she voted no because she had run on a pacifist platform. She promised the people in Montana that she would not send their kids off to war. And she along with there was 49 other congressmen who voted against war as well. She wasn't the only one. Okay. Mm-hmm. But she voted against war, and she was roundly criticized for this. You know, she was letters, newspaper headlines, editorials. She was criticized across the country for this. And basically her stay in Congress was one term, and she was ineffective in passing legislation. And if I can just, jump, you want me to jump ahead 20 years to what happened? Okay. Mm-hmm. So then she left office. She didn't run for re-election because she knew she would never get elected again. And then she worked as a lobbyist for 20 years, but she remained, half in the public eye. And then it was 1940. So we all know what's going on in 1940. Hitler's in power. The Nazis are gearing up for war. And in fact, they've already started war in Europe through various invasions. And the U.S. has not entered World War II yet. And then, of course, December 7th, 1941. Let me back up for a sec. So Rankin decides that she should run for office again 20 years later, because mm-hmm. the only way to keep America out of war, she thinks, is to for her to participate in politics and convince people that America should not join World War II, no matter what. Mm-hmm. She believed that if the U.S. was invaded on its soil, the 48 states, then yes, we should enter World War. Aside from that, she would not vote for the U.S. to enter the war. So she's a member of Congress. And then, of course, December 7th, 1941, the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. And December 8th, 1941, President Roosevelt goes to Congress and says, gives this famous speech, a day that will live in infamy. Yesterday we were bombed at Pearl Harbor. Thousands were killed. He asked for a declaration of war against Japan. And, of course, the public sentiment at the time was, of course, the U.S. has to enter the war. We have to defend ourselves. They just killed, thousands of U.S. sailors. And she stood up and she voted against the U.S. entering the war. And this time, she was the only member of Congress to do this. The only one person. Okay, so you can imagine, she stood her ground, and she was booed mm-hmm. in the halls of Congress. She was criticized when she left the chamber. She was harassed so much by people in the Capitol building that she had to call the Capitol Police to come get her, to take her to her office, because she feared for her safety. So, wow. And this is a woman who, that's why I kept saying in my book, she was a woman who really stood her ground and wouldn't back down. And she knew she would never get elected again. And she was, for the most part, criticized. There were some newspapers and people who came to her aid and said that, she stood her ground, and there are men who would have liked to have voted this way, but they don't have the guts to do it. So, her terms in her two terms in Congress are dominated by these two votes. She passed little legislation, if any. So what I said before, that she shot herself in the foot, so she couldn't really push her causes in Congress because she was not really so well respected in Congress regarding mm-hmm. the overall congressional issues because of what the way she voted.
Wow. You know, when you think about the fact that someone standing up for principle, you know, gets, you know, that kind of treatment and, in effect, you know, doesn't run for re-election, realizing that they won't be, you know, re-elected. I mean, to me, it seems, you know, and because, like you say, she shot herself in the foot regarding, you know, how things worked in Washington. I mean, very much right now, it is the same kind of situation as you find very few people in those positions who stand up on principle and actually to the point of voting, you know, on principle, you know, and, you know, it's just one of those. And in her case, it was more important to uphold that principle rather than get reelected, which is not the case anymore.
Right. And she may have, you know, she stood her ground and did what she promised she would do. On the other hand, she might have hurt her overall agenda because, she believed that one of her early political sayings, and I'm paraphrasing here, was that, you know, women, this is going back to really her first term, women were responsible for taking care of children, but they didn't have the right to vote. That to her was like this gross inequity. And so if she had remained in office, she certainly would have, I think, accomplished more legislatively.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she that's not the way history played out, you know. She certainly is an example of someone who said something, did what she said she was going to do, and, you know, lived by her principles.
Yeah. You know, there are so many instances her journey that are just valuable lessons, you know, for kids to learn. And, you know, and particularly now you would, you know, your target market for this, or the target reader, is middle grade school kids. It seems that, you know, that particular age is the time when they're, you know, in addition to absorbing, you know, everything all around them, they're really kind of sussing out their belief systems, you know, kind of examining, you know, their what they were brought up to believe, how they feel. I mean, it seems that it's like a critical time period where beliefs are established and also changed or modified, you know, depending on what they learn. So it seems like that's a good age to send out that message to.
Yeah, I agree with you, Robert. I think that, you know, kids at that age are a little less cynical than teenagers in high school. I see it for mm-hmm. my own kids. It's obviously they grow up, they develop their very strong opinions, which is great. That's what we all do. And everyone should do that. I also think, you know, I think it would be good. My book is, I think it's written for middle graders who are motivated. And I say that because I don't think it's an easy read for necessarily an 8 or 9 year old. It's 126 pages.
Mm-hmm.
But I think certain many of them can do it. I think it's also, you know, for early high schoolers, it could be an interesting read as well, just because I think it's the book's about a person most people don't know about, and it's so relevant for today. So that's just, you know, my take on the thing. I don't even think adults can read it.
Yeah.
Because I think that we don't know about this person.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, it is, you know, for adults, obviously, it's an easy read, you know, but I mean,
sure.
But it's one of those things where if you are a thinker, you know, that you know, things that are happening around in the world, and you want to try and put things into perspectives. I mean, it's one of those books that once you read it, then your awareness, I think, just pops up a little bit higher, so that you start paying attention to some people who may not have that name recognition, but whose works are influential.
Yes, right. I agree.
Yeah. So now this is the second in the Groundbreaker series. So tell us a little bit about who are the others, and who have you written about? Now, this was the second. So who was the first?
The second. Well, the first book, and I just said, so I came up with the Groundbreaker series because I wanted to write short biographies about, extraordinary people who did extraordinary things, but people who are not household names, because there are a lot of middle grade books out there about the people we all know about, Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, Albert Einstein, and so forth. There's wonderful books out there about all these very famous people. So I'm trying to write about the people who are sort of not as famous, but also have done extraordinary things in their lives. So my first book was about a man named Bronislaw Huberman, who is even less well-known than Jeanette Rankin, certainly to Americans. Huberman was a Polish Jew who was one of the world's most famous violinists in the early part of the 19th century. So actually he lived around the same time. He was actually born around the same time that Jeanette Rankin was born, but he was a European. Wonderful violinist. And also, again, following along with Jeanette Rankin's interests, he was also a humanitarian. He was a great violinist, but he believed in human causes and raised money for people who suffered and so forth. And did you want to ask me a question?
No, go ahead, please.
Okay, so when Hitler came to power in 1933 and the Nazis began clamping down on the Jews of Europe, Huberman began seeing what was going on with the Jewish musicians in Europe. But, he was a man, again, who played with all the leading orchestras in Europe, including the leading orchestra in Germany, the Berlin Philharmonic. And so when Hitler came to power, Jewish professionals lost their jobs, whether it was Jewish lawyers, Jewish doctors, Jewish musicians. And as Huberman saw this, he began to realize he needed to do something to help the Jewish musicians of Europe. And he came up with a plan to start an orchestra in Palestine. The country of Israel didn't exist then. Palestine was the land in the Mideast. Arabs and Jews lived. It was then at the time a territory that was controlled by the British. And so Huberman decided, but there was still thousands of Jews living there. And Huberman decided to start an orchestra in Palestine comprised of Jewish musicians from Europe who had to get out of Europe to escape Hitler and the Nazis. And so my book is, subtitled Bronislaw Huberman, From Child Prodigy to Hero, The Violinist Who Saved Jewish Musicians from the Holocaust. So we started the orchestra in Palestine, and approximately 70 musicians and their families left Palestine in 1936 and moved to Palestine to start the Palestine Orchestra. And this orchestra eventually became the Israel Philharmonic Orchestra, which today, 80 years later, is still in existence. And in fact, it's one of the finest orchestras in the world. The conductor was Zubin Mehta, and this came from this germ of an idea by Huberman to save these Jews in Germany and elsewhere in Europe.
Wow. I had no idea. That's another fascinating story. And again, somebody that you just don't know or haven't heard about.
Right. I have my filing cabinet, honestly, is filled with ideas for the next 10 years, and I'm not exaggerating when I say that. I know you're going to ask me who's next, and I can't tell you next. But I haven't picked the next one yet.
Okay, you're reading my mind. You're reading my mind now. So okay, so we'll have to keep our eyes open for that. But I love the heading on your website, PeterAaronson.com, PeterAaronsonBooks.com, about adventurous and inspiring books for adventurous and inspired kids. You know, it's really parents and grandparents who are listening who have kids or grandkids around that age. You know, this type of book is can really help foster that the inquisitiveness, the desire to read, and not from a phone or a social media site, but actually, learn some history, but also just to get that questioning going, that thought process stimulated, and when it comes to kids, that's critical in keeping them interested and engaged.
Robert, that's really nice of you to say, and that was the purpose of writing these books. One of the reasons why I haven't picked my next groundbreaker book is because I'm finishing up a middle grade novel, which is about kids trying to tackle global warming. And so it sort of continues my theme of just trying to write about real people, or at least real issues. I'm really trying to focus on just things that matter. And it's just, that's my goal.
Yeah. Well, those are very socially conscious topics. And very
yes.
topical for what's happening in today's world, and it's a great way to, get kids engaged. And I really think that they want to be engaged. And, and the fact that you're highlighting people who they may never have heard of, and most likely never have heard of, also kind of plants that seed that they can be one of those people and don't have to have, a super high, presence in order to do that. But it's a matter of, doing what it is that you have a passion for.
Exactly. Right. I agree. I really feel very passionate about what I'm doing. I love what I'm doing. And I don't mind that I gave up my law career for this, because this is a lot more fun. Can I just say a plug for where the books are being sold, because they're available
Please.
On Amazon.
Yep.
They're mm-hmm. available on Amazon for the general public, and they're available at Ingram, which school teachers and librarians would know about Ingram. And I'm going to spell my last name because it's an unusual spelling, and if you want to Google it to find the books. My last name is spelled Aronson. First name is Peter, and that's my plug. I hope you don't mind.
No, I don't mind at all. No, I have your website, PeterAaronsonBooks.com, in the show page description. So those listening on Blog Talk Radio will be able to see it there, and those listening on the other platforms, we said it. In the beginning of the show, the medium of the show, and we'll say it at the end of the show. So I guess one of the things is that I know personally many teachers and several librarians. So it seems that would be helpful to get the word out, if a listener has an acquaintance, if they are a teacher or an administrator or a librarian, that this would be a great book to include in a curriculum. Now, would you think that this would be part of a history type of curriculum?
Well, I think, classes who are studying American history and they're running mm-hmm. through, the 17, 18, the 1900s into the 20th century, I think this book could be included in, when you study the suffrage movement and you study American politics, she played a key role in both of those things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it would be great. There's a lot of great books out there, but this could be added to the curriculum for sure.
Yeah,
and I'm also,
yeah.
You know, even though I live in New York, Robert, certainly in the New York City metropolitan area, but, you know, via Skype, I'm really happy to participate in, you know, with classes. If a teacher wanted to Skype me in, and I could talk to kids about what it was like writing this book. I've done some speaking with students at some schools. But I get stuff for me to travel all around the country as much as I would like to do that. But certainly in modern technology today, you know, I'm happy to, teacher wants to bring me in via Skype, I'm happy to do that and talk and so forth.
That's great. That's a great idea. So I'll definitely be sure to let my friends know that are in that the educational area about that, and that's a great way to build interest. So well Peter, I really want to thank you for your time today. I really enjoyed speaking with you. I learned a lot about Jeanette Rankin, you know, and I look forward to whoever number three is going to be in the Groundbreaker series.
Thank you, Robert. I really enjoyed being on your show. Thank you so much, and I wish you and your listeners the best.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Again, everyone, my special guest has been Peter Aronson. We've been talking about his new book, Jeanette Rankin, America's First Congresswoman. Again, you can find out more about Peter's books by visiting his website, which is peteraronsonbooks.com. That's peteraronsonbooks.com. And again, if you're a teacher, administrator, or just an interested parent or grandparent who wants to get your children inspired, definitely pick up a copy. Again, it is available at Amazon.com. And for those of you in the educational realm, through Ingram. So everyone, I want to thank you very much for listening and joining us for today's show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me. And our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.